from the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
Well, good morning, and it's December 14th, 2017. Beginning to look a lot like Christmas around the world. We actually, as you know, had a little bit of a snow thing last week, which we only do snow here in Central Texas every 20 years or so. So it was pretty exciting. Well, what are we going to do this morning? We're going to talk about a lot of fun stuff. Next hour, Michelle Perrow. Michelle is out in California, and she's co-authored a book just coming out called What's Making Our Children Sick? Whoa. And into the idea of GMO foods, glyphosate, and gut health. And she's going to be interesting for sure. And that is next hour. We're trying to connect with Brandon Amalani from Shen Blossom. We may talk to Brandon for a few minutes again this morning. We had an internet crackdown, breakdown. I think it was an NSA thing. Must have been something I said where that didn't work. When Brandon was on a few days ago. And speaking of that, then, last time we were going to have Dr. Kristen Story held on, well, it was crazy. The whole region went out. The telephone lines went out, and then also the internet on her end was not happening, and it was just one of those mornings. So, well, we're going to do it now. Dr. Kristen Story held. Oh, she's got three names. That'll confuse me. I'll probably just call her Kristen Held. I have a hard time with two names, much less three. And she's a nice lady in San Antonio, not far from here. And she's a board-certified ophthalmologist. You know, ophthalmologist, surgeon? That's an eye doc. Phi Beta Kappa, graduate University of Texas in Austin. Received her medical degree from the University of Texas Medical School in San Antonio. And she's blonde hair, so typical Texas girl, blonde hair. See, Dr. Held, you just fit the mold. Good for you.
I love it.
how are you doing, Dr. Held?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. I love the opportunity to get to discuss this important topic of what's going on with our medical care, top down, coming down to us from Washington, D.C. So thank you for inviting me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. We like to explore all these things to keep our listeners around the world just kind of up on what the one we love, that's the way we say it around here. We always try to keep our karma at a minimum. The one we love, you know, that's how we do it. as bonkers as they are sometimes, God love them. Why this interest? You're an ophthalmologist, you're an eye doc, right? You're an eye doctor. All this interest in your four daughters, you told me, all this interest in medicine and government, how did this start?
Well, you know, I really believe, as does my father was a neurosurgeon, the first chairman of neurosurgery here in San Antonio. He grew up in South Texas and came back when the med school started. So I've grown up in a medical family, and I believe that medicine is a calling. It's the greatest calling. When I determined that I was going to become a physician and go to, you know, college, then med school, internship, residency, I could think of no more greater calling, no more noble profession than really trying to work to serve and help others. So that was my story. And one of my greatest rewards has been seeing my two oldest daughters go into medicine. And it is a rite of passage like no other, because my second daughter, who's an intern in internal medicine right now, is, you know, also about to have a baby. And she is working hours and hours and hours and days and weeks in service of others, and you get worn out, you get burnout, you start to hit a wall, but then you come back and say, what am I doing? I'm doing the greatest thing you could do. I'm trying to help patients and their families. And So that's where what got me into it, because it's the age-old struggle for the soul of healthcare that dates back as far as, you know, the ancient times. And, you know, who do you serve? Do you serve the patient or do you serve the state? And who do you want making your medical decisions, you and your doctor or the government? And our government, you know, 50 years ago, they created Medicare and Medicaid. Medicare as the healthcare insurance for the elderly, and Medicaid as our safety net for the poor. Well, in the past 50 years, you know, this has just escalated, snowballed to the point that now they want to take over everyone, commercially insured, uninsured. They've driven the message that if you're not insured, you have nothing. And, you know, we all know that insurance is not healthcare. But, you know, when they created Medicare and Medicaid, there was a prohibition clause, and it said that in no way, you know, nothing shall be construed to authorize any federal officer or employee to exercise any sort of supervision or control over the practice of medicine or manner in which it's provided, so, you know, in any way. And it's very clear in the law, and we can see where we've gone over the last 50 years.
And that
so that's
was in,
why I got involved.
That was in for the very beginning of saying that the bureaucrats, the government people shouldn't be involved in any kind of decisions for the patient?
That is in 1965 when they added the Social Security Amendments. LBJ was president, another Texan, right into the Social Security Amendments. That's Section 1801. Section 1802 guarantees free choice by the of the patients. Free choice by patient guaranteed. Prohibition against any federal interference. Those are two really important clauses that can be, you know, Googled up and read by anyone. And we've really, we've strayed from that, to say the least, to put it nicely, in the last 50 years.
Now you go, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to say, not only, you know, in 2009, following the election of President Obama, and, you know, the perfect storm, they had the House, the Senate, the White House, and they launched into, in January of 2009, with implementing the infrastructure for single-payer government-run medicine. And, you know, here we are now in 2017, and there's been such infrastructure laid that, you know, we are, the train tracks are laid, and the train is steaming down the track. And it's going to be very, very important that we all pay attention to this, know what's going on, and at some point we're going to have to stop the engine.
So you're saying... I hear you saying that it's been a long-term plan to do a single-payer thing in Obamacare, and whatever's going on now is just, it's kind of baked in the cake that this is what they, whoever they are, want.
Well, I do believe that. And if you go back and listen to what they said, they told us that, and you can see all the video clips of it, of him saying this isn't it, but, you know, step-by-step approach, that's where we're headed, be patient. And that's true. And, you know, the very first thing that was done in 2009 was the American Investment and Recovery Act, the stimulus bill, and that had two things in it, the High-Tech Act, Health Information Technology Act, and they actually put in their $35 billion to lay the infrastructure for the electronic health record and back and forth bidirectional ability of government to get into the records and input guidelines and put information and extract information. So that was $35 billion, of which about $28 billion have been spent. And they also put into effect then CER, Comparative Effectiveness Research. And that is very frightening. That's where government will decide, you know, what's worth, what they're going to pay for you having, basically. They'll be the arbiter and rationer of your care. And, you know, the most chilling words I think that President Obama ever spoke were, and he's told this to a woman whose mother was about 100 and got a pacemaker and had a wonderful quality of life, actually. And, you know, who's the judge of that? And he said, you know, we'll let your mom know. We'll let your mom know. We'll let you know. We'll let your doctor know and your mom know that, you know what, maybe it's not better to have the surgery but to take the pain medication. And that's the fundamental.
Really?
Yes. And that he said that. And that can be looked at in full-fledged video as well. And that's very telling, and that is the basic principle of what was established in Obamacare, that things will be, the government will decide through a multiple series of agencies and task forces and comparison of any sort of treatment, regardless of cause, to pain management, which one you should have. And it's going to depend on a lot of factors, from age to accessibility to cost. And that's where we are. And that infrastructure is there. And the second law that really is of great concern to me is one called MACRA, the Medicare Access and CHIP Reauthorization Act. And I was in D.C. I've gone there numerous times, as I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. I was up there I'm a member of a group called the National Physicians Council for Healthcare Policy. And I was up there for one of our meetings, and I was distraught about the kind of insane ICD-10 code. And little did I find out that it wasn't the ICD-10 coding that I needed to be worried about, but it was this law MACRA that had just gone through the House and was about to go to the Senate. So I went home, downloaded the 243-page law, and I was chilled. I was aghast. And interestingly, it was sponsored by a physician congressman, Dr. Mike Burgess, who is a Republican congressman from up around Dallas-Fort Worth area, Texas 26. And of all things, for a physician Republican congressman to sponsor MACRA, I just can't get over it. And I really think people need to look at primarying him and replacing him with someone else, because I think the legislation is irresponsible, and it's already being proven to be harmful to patients. MedPAC, the Medicare Payment Advisory Commission, an appointed commission, has already come out and said that the MIPS, the Merit-Based Incentive Payment System that he created in that law, needs to be repealed. And we need to spend a little bit of time. I hope we have time to talk about that.
Okay, we do. But we have to pick this apart, because you're giving us a lot of acronyms and MACRAs and MIPS and holy cow, and to understand what we're talking about here. So let's see. Let's talk about you as a doc and studying this for 10 years. What are the basic dangers you see, big picture going on? Is it the accessibility of the records on these? I'm sure they're going to be doing blockchain and chips and stuff to see what everybody is taking and being able to score if grandma needs to get a surgery or maybe just pain meds. Is that part of it? But the main concerns with all these different programs that you're seeing, that you see are on the tracks, ready to be launched.
Okay, it's twofold.
Okay.
And the first one is from the patient side of it. Government is now top down determining how much money will be spent,
how much money will be spent for each patient?
Well, on everything. So if you look at what's happened, you know, think about this. Our budget being, you know, the national budget spending $3.1 trillion a year. Well, we've over the last 10 years now going over to $1 trillion a year spent on healthcare alone.
Right.
That's a huge piece of the pie. Now, the problem is that the smaller and smaller amount of that is going to patient care. Larger and larger amount of that is going to third and fourth and fifth party of a very corrupt medical industrial complex.
Yes, ma'am.
And this is very concerning. We now have business people, you know, owners. You know, we've got everyone from very major insurance corporations like United Healthcare that now has sprouted off branches like United Optum, and there's now then we've sprouted out and created these pharmaceutical benefit managers in the pharmacy side of it, these things called group purchasing organizations that come between hospitals and insurance companies and patients. So when I'm talking about a complex, I'm talking about massive groups of outside interests taking money away from the patient. And so we are falsely inflating the cost of medical care, and we are putting multiple barriers in between the patient and physician and making it more difficult for the patient to get care.
Okay, let's stop there a second and let's pick this apart a bit. So give us just a hypothetical example of what you just said about raising the cost and then putting layers in between the doctor and the patient. Give us an example. Say if I was going to go and, I don't know, get get cataract surgery or something.
Okay, so here's a great example.
Yeah.
So there's two parts of the service. There's the physician side, so you have my fee. And then there's the surgical side. You have fee from the surgical center, which is owned by a hospital or a group of physicians or an insurance company. Basically, in Obamacare, they made it illegal now for physicians to own a hospital. You have to, there's all sorts of issues with that. The government took it over, and now they're going to run the hospital, and they're going to set the fees. And there's a thing called the Charge Master Bill, which is a basic bill that people will get. So if you go to the surgery center and you're going to have cataract surgery, you will get a bill for $15,000.
And this would be a hospital that is eventually going to all be owned by government?
This is an outpatient surgery center. Now, let me tell you, if you have it done at the hospital, it will be higher. It might be $20,000. So there's a disparity that favors hospitals. So as a result, hospitals are trying to buy physician practices because they make more money. And if you look at what's happening, the costs of Medicare by employed physicians are going up because hospitals are able to charge more. So we're on a negative track. Those like me, now let's contrast that. I see, because I've studied this intently, hours upon hours, and read all the laws, which few people do, I have actually opted out of all third party. So I was able to go to the surgery center and negotiate my fee at $1,200. So $1,200 is a far cry from $15,000, isn't it?
Yeah. So a fair price is actually $1,200 for an eye experience, we'll call it that, rather than what is being charged,
$15,000 versus $1,200? Yes.
Wow.
And guess what?
How can there be that much different? Well, where's the $13,800 going?
Let's talk about that. And let me give you a little side note.
Now, this is getting complicated. I'm trying to just help us to understand.
Okay. Well, Medicare, let me just put it in perspective. Medicare pays about $1,000.
For the $15,000.
For the $15,000. So I'm paying a little more than Medicare.
Okay.
All right. So that's the bill. And then we have to talk about what's paid by insurance on Medicare. That's called the allowable. So the patient gets the bill. They're frightened. And they think, my gosh, thank goodness I have insurance. But really what's happening is that what's getting paid to the surgery centers is lower. So if Medicare pays $1,000, but they bill $15,000, there's a $14,000 discrepancy.
Right.
So that is called the disproportionate share hospital. So at the end of the year, they're able to submit those losses, quote unquote, and get subsidies from the government.
For the $14,000 they said they were owed, right?
But that
is pretty much profit, though, because it only cost them $12,000.
It doesn't even cost them 12. They're profiting. They're making a profit at 12.
Mm-hmm.
Then they're getting subsidies for the loss. And guess what else is happening in hospitals? They're able to say they're nonprofit.
Oh, good.
So then they don't have to pay tax. Wouldn't you love not to pay taxes?
Wow. So these are the government owned. No, or the hospitals are government owned, right? Well, the government doesn't pay. Oh, I'm sorry.
They're not a government-owned. So think about the hospitals. The VA is government-owned. That's another we can come back and talk about that in the military hospitals. But these are the American Hospital Association is all the hospitals are members of that. And so now you can see who do you think the American Hospital Association is going to side with, the patient or the government and single payer? You know, the government hires, basically what's happening now is all the money is going to insurance companies. Think about Medicare and Medicare Advantage. These outside companies like United, Humana, there's only a few left, are managing the government money for Medicare payment payers. And so they are another entity taking money out. They negotiate with the hospitals. There are all sorts of these outside entities getting kickbacks. And taking money out from between the physician and the patient and even the government and the patient. So you heard me earlier talk about, you know, we just talked about what the hospital and the surgery centers do. And let me talk to you about commercial insurance. What do they do? So let's say you have Aetna. Well, they've gone to the hospital and said, well, we're not going to pay $15,000. We'll pay $4,000. So that's your allowable. So the patient will get the bill for $15,000, but they'll only have to pay $4,000 because that's what the insurance company negotiated. What if your allowable, what if your deductible, because they've gotten so high under Obamacare, what if your deductible is $5,000? You're going to pay all $5,000. So if you came to a person like me, and I know, I think you've had Keith Smith on, Dr. Keith Smith,
yes,
the Surgery Center,
yes,
of Oklahoma.
Have. Yes, we have.
Keith is awesome, and I've been up there to his center. He's amazing. And this is what we need to have, is direct patient care, where we get all these, you know, outside leeches out. But think about this. If you don't use your insurance, you just come to me or Keith Smith.
Right.
We've negotiated $1,200, or Keith has his own surgery center. His cost is low. So you could pay $1,200, or you can use your insurance that's negotiated $4,000, and you can pay all $4,000 because your deductible is $5,000. So your insurances, many things are costing more using your insurance than if you do direct patient care, and everyone's benefiting but the patient. And if you need medications, this is a whole other topic we should definitely address. There's $100 billion a year going to a monopsony where group purchasing organizations and pharmaceutical benefit managers are literally deciding what medications will be on your formularies, what you can have, what their cost will be. And it's all based on what the poor pharmaceutical companies have to pay to these intermediaries to get their drugs on the market.
What a mess.
And this needs to be, it needs to be stopped.
You know what, Dr. Held? I'm a pretty smart guy, and I'm a good listener. And I am totally befuddled about what's really going on, and you're very clear. I mean, that's just, it is like some soup that they've made to benefit a whole bunch of people. I hear, if I'm hearing correctly, mostly insurance companies are the people making the money, where all this money is going.
Well, they really are. And you know, when they talk about, and right now, what do you think about this? When CVS Pharmacy wants to buy Aetna,
I know, I
insurance
saw that. Yeah, they're going to buy
for $69 billion.
Whoa.
And yet the insurance companies are crying to get these subsidies from the government. It's all, you know, maybe the insurance on Obamacare isn't making money, but their employer side's making money, their Medicaid is making money, and their pharmaceutical division's making money. You know, they're crying about losing $300 million while they're making $4 billion. So you really have to look at this. It's all about messaging. And, you know, the left comes across very compassionate. Hmm. And the message is convoluted. Remember the MIT economist, Jonathan Gruber?
Yes.
Gruber, who's one of the architects of Obamacare. They think we're stupid, which we're not. We the people are smart. They think we're stupid, and they intentionally made this convoluted. And then they crafted a message and stole the message. And what we the people have to do is do what you're doing, is take time. And you can't explain this in 5 or 10
no,
minutes.
No, come on. You couldn't even explain it in an hour, you know.
No.
Dr. Kristen Story Held, Government Takeover of Medicine. Is there a couple websites before we go any further to recommend people could kind of understand what's going on? Do you have your own website on this? Is there a group that are helping people to understand this whole scenario?
I want to tell you about an amazing group, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, AAPSonline.org. They're on Facebook, Twitter, a website, AAPSonline.org. I'm on the board of directors. The CEO is Dr. Jane Orient. Our legal counsel is Andy Schlafly, who is Phyllis Schlafly's son, Schlafly. And Andy was also a law school colleague on the Law Review with President Obama. So we have a group that has a lot of insight, wonderful physicians that really are promoting the patient. Our motto in Latin is all for the patient. We are standing for the patient-physician relationship against the government takeover of medicine. And it's a tough haul because in stark contrast, the American Medical Association, you know, the American Medical Association makes far more millions of dollars from government interest than they do from physician dues. Less than 17% of physicians are in the AMA. And the CEO of the AMA is a fellow, a physician named Dr. James Matera, who used to be the dean of the University of Chicago, who is dear, dear friends and was on the hospital board in Chicago with Michelle Obama and Valerie Jarrett, and has a very vested interest in getting government-run medicine. So when you have this person as the CEO of the AMA, you really have to question their stances, and also when you see where their money's coming from. So I encourage everyone, and if you are a patient, you don't have to be a physician to join AAPS. We want you to get online, join right now, and you can be a member. You have access to all of our articles, and you can. We're so approachable. You can call, you can email us. You'll get an email and a call back. We are for the patient. And, you know, we are Hippocratic physicians who honor our oath to our patients. We honor privacy, dignity, confidentiality, you know, as opposed to, for example, Ezekiel Emanuel, Rahm Emanuel's brother, who was one of the architects of Obamacare, and he bemoaned that doctors take the Hippocratic Oath too seriously, that we see it as an imperative to do everything for the patient, regardless of the cost or effects on others. And he really believed that reform includes redefining doctors' ethical obligations. And he believed medical students should be trained to provide socially sustainable, cost-effective care. And you see the AMA reworking their code of ethics. And this is quite a cataclysmic time in medicine. You know, Don Berwick, who was Obama's first appointed head of the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, was enamored with the British system, and we know how horrible that's been. And he believed that the federal government, this is what he believed, must step in between doctors and patients to curb and redistribute the use of medical resources with allocation based on subgroups, not the individual patient. And this is quite chilling. He believed that young doctors and nurses should emerge from training understanding the values of standardization and the risks of too great an emphasis on individual autonomy. So, you know, this is how we got to MACRA and the government scoring system, MIPS, which is the merit-based incentive payment system, where government is now creating law to drive physician behavior, and they're doing that by having us paid or penalized based on what we do or don't do. And the government, you've got to understand, this goes back to what we were talking about earlier. The second aspect of this is that the swamp is influenced by money, and the money lies in the hands of multi-billion dollar corporations and groups like the American Health Insurance Group, the American Hospital Association. These people have billions of dollars, and lobbyists that spend hundreds of millions of dollars in Washington paying off our politicians for their vote. As physicians and patients have no power.
Now, these are the real globalists trying to get, in my opinion, President Trump out. I mean, President Trump at least was talking about maybe seeing if we can figure out how to get some of the meds from Canada. And he talked about that during the campaign, also to insurance companies, maybe bidding for things crossing state lines. And this must be some of the reason why these people want to get him out?
Of course it is. Of course it is. Absolutely. This is, you know, when you have over $1 trillion at play, in the quote-unquote healthcare market, that's a lot of money.
Isn't it more than that, Dr. Held? Even a trillion? Maybe it is.
No, trillion. And I meant to say trillion. 1.1 trillion. Over $1.1 trillion a year.
And I wonder, could you even hazard a guess? And we need to do the break here. But could you even hazard a guess out of the 1.1 trillion, say if there was nobody involved and people were just going to someone like you and getting eye surgery or whatever, you know, getting a stint in if they choose to do that or something like that. what it would cost?
Absolutely. Those numbers are available. And in models like Dr. Keith Smith's and mine, we have shown, and even doctors like Josh Umber in Kansas, who have direct patient care models, we can provide the care at 10 to 20% of the cost.
So for a couple hundred million, or a billion rather, or for a couple hundred billion, you could do it all, you think?
Oh, yeah. If you look at just even what they spend on the children's, the CHIP program, it's about $8 billion. And if you look at what they're just wasting on this and that plan and program in just data collection and auditing, they're spending way more than that in all of their ridiculous regulation and rules and bureaucracy and deep state. It's criminal, and they don't have the money for that. And hopefully we can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So you're saying the whole thing would cost Americans about $200 billion or so to get everything done that they want to get done. And right now, somehow there's another $900 billion that's being wasted through insurance companies and bureaucracy and who knows what.
And inflated costs.
Inflated costs, right.
Artificially inflated costs because there's so many people taking out the money. If we look at the actual, and that's the big myth, is that we have to have insurance because without insurance, you can't get the care or the medicine.
Of course, that's the big.
We've got to fix the underlying problem. If we get everybody else out, yeah, we can. But if you look at electronic medical records.
Let me do this break. I have to do a couple commercials. Okay. Stay right there. Man, this will make your head explode. 888-663-6386. Maybe you have some specific questions for Dr. Hell that would help. Because I'm just still trying to understand what's going on. It's pretty massive, huh? 888-663-6386. Well, we've been doing this show for 10 years, and I've done other radio shows prior to going back to 1968. But our mission here has been to help people to stay out of the doctor's office. That's what we do. I mean, hopefully you never have to go unless you break a leg or, have a little car crash karma and whatever. And they put you back together and things like that. Other than that, stay away, if you can. I mean, that's what we try to do. And there's a lot of different ways to do that with diet and exercise, of course, and right thinking and good spiritual practice, the whole picture. And detox, of course, is part of that game. And this is one of the ways we promote that. Previously with Dr. Thomas Rau, the Pericles Medical Clinic in Switzerland. Their specialty is detoxification. We asked him about far infrared saunas.
The far infrared sauna goes much deeper into the skin subcutaneously. It has its maximum about 4 to 5 centimeters below the skin surface.
You've actually measured materials in the sweat and you've proven this.
Yes, the patients after a week doing this every day, half an hour or 45 minutes, they react quite much with sweat. Then you can collect this sweat, then you measure this, and then you find how much they detoxify with the heavy metals. It's really amazing.
It really is pretty amazing. These are beautiful units. We have a special deal with Momentum that brings these in from Taiwan, a medical university, and they're generally $11.95 delivered continental U.S., but we can get you one at $9.95 delivered. Hawaii, Alaska, Canada, it's generally only about another $100. Actually, only $50 to Hawaii, $50 to Alaska, and I think $100 to Canada. So pretty cool. Pretty cool idea. And these are quiet, very effective. They have a tremendous amount of heat, so you'll sweat a lot. And also then the far infrared technology and extremely low EMFs. We've measured that. And so it's a great unit. You sit in there, it's personal. You don't need any plumbing done. And it's one of the best. They have won about 5 different awards, these people, medical university in Taiwan. And we think it's one of the most effective far red friend saunas anywhere in the world. Well, I say the world, the one that are available out there now, then most of them are $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 of wooden things. And these do a better job in our opinion. And they're a lot less expensive and you can put them in a corner and whatever, and in your bedroom or whatever, somewhere. And I have one under my stairwell that's coming up to the studio, and it's a nice little fit. Fits right in there. And I do them most every day of my life. They're beautiful little machines. Just email me if you'd like to get one, and I'll give you a deal. Patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. You don't get the deal by going right to the website. Website, have to come to me, Patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. Previously with Andrew Goss, I asked him why would someone want to buy coins from his company?
So if you don't know coins, you better know your coin dealer. And, you know, you shouldn't buy coins from someone who isn't well-known registered dealer. So if they're an NGC dealer, they're registered with NGC. If they're a PCGS dealer, they're registered with PCGS. Ask questions. Don't just, oh yeah, here's 10 grand or 50 grand or 150 grand. I just want to buy coins, you know, let me know what I'm getting. And no, that's not how an intelligent investor does it. And we do not let you do that. So if you're not willing to learn about the coins that you're buying, maybe you should find another coin firm. Don't call this one, because we're going to insist that you know why and how a coin is rare. And once you know that, then I think you can take that knowledge into the marketplace and make intelligent investment decisions.
Aha, what a concept, intelligent investment decisions. I've known Andrew for 25 years. He's the real deal. His company, STL 800-468-2646. Give him a call if you're interested. 800-468-2646. I've quite a great show with Andrew. He's on here every Wednesday. He's a dear friend of mine of 25 years. And it's a great show, so you might want to check it out on our website. We've been doing a show with Andrew every week for 10 years now. And so there's 10 years worth of shows in our archives. Everything is free. Gold is $12.51 this morning. Silver is $15.91. The stock market keeps going up. One of the big all-time bubbles ever, in our opinion, along with Bitcoin. 24,600 for the Dow. And the dollar is, what the dollar is doing, it's up a little bit this morning. So there you have it from usgoldcoins.com. Andy Goss is coming.
Know the source.
The source.
OneRadioNetwork.com.
If you knew that you would die today, you saw the face of God and love, would you change? Would you change? If you knew that love can't break your heart, when you're down so low you cannot fall, would you change? Would you change?
Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com.
Dr. Kristen Held is with us. She's in San Antonio, ophthalmologist and board-certified ophthalmologist. She's been looking at this whole healthcare thing for about 10 years and goes to Washington often and just trying to help people figure out what's going on and see if we can have a little more control in what happens. Dr. Held, this idea of a single-payer thing, which you mentioned, so with all you know, what do you think this military or this medical-industrial complex in holding hands with the United States government Once at the end of the day? I mean, when they do that magic paintbrush on the whiteboard, what do they want? What do they see? And how would this single payer look? What would it look like?
Well, I actually think that it's been planned out for a long time, and I see United Healthcare and United Optum as staying as the single payer, the corporation. The government pays them, and they provide everyone's care. So the insurance company is de facto the rationers. And I really have thought that. Now, what's interesting is that the former CMS who left, Andy Slavitt, started out with United and United Optum, and now he's back in the private sector. So that's interesting, isn't it?
So who's,
and you can,
yeah, so who owns United Healthcare? It's just a private corporation?
Yeah, it's a huge corporation, and it's got worldwide, it's giant. And I always thought that what they would do is kind of have lost leaders in a way here, be the last person standing in the United States, and by exerting all their power and influence, and they'd they could stay bolstered up by their worldwide holdings and global money, and then everybody else would go by the wayside. There's only a few left when you think about it.
Yeah.
Look at CVS buying Aetna.
Yeah.
And as much as they try to fight the monopolies, it's not happening.
So single payer would be, you go to a doctor, you get a colonoscopy, and United Healthcare thing pays the freight. And how does the person pay through their Medicare payments every month out of their check?
Yes, well, that's part of the strategy, is there's no transparency, so you never know as a patient what you're paying, and so you don't care. You go to the doctor, you get your care. You don't care if it's $10 or $1,000.
Right.
And so that's the problem, and that's part of it. So, but the problem is, before you go in and can get your colonoscopy, you have to meet their guidelines. And so their guidelines aren't necessarily what's best for you as a patient. There's
right.
a lot of delay and denial of care.
Right. Standard yes. of care with the doctor. He's got to do this and this and this and then and the whole.
Right.
So they're controlling the whole
every
step of the way. And they may give the doctor... I don't know. The doctor might get more than what he really should get for a colonoscopy with a fair profit. Is that accurate?
No, they're really trying. There's a huge, this is where we tie back into the MIPS. They're trying to change medicine from fee for service. You know, you go to the grocery, you buy bread, you pay.
Right.
You go to the doctor, you have an operation, you pay.
Right.
They're trying to change it from fee for service to this idea called quality payment, where value payments. So they're trying to give doctors a score, and doctors will be paid based on their score. So the score is literally it's called a composite performance score from 0 to 100. There's 4 categories. At the end of the year, you have a score, and based on your score, you either get incentivized, like government plus a percentage,
mm-hmm.
or you get penalized, government minus a percentage.
Government meaning what the government's going to pay you.
What they want to pay.
Okay, what they want to pay.
So there's going to be a Medicare fee, and really this is going to be applied to everyone because all the commercial insurers fall in line. And in the MIPS and macro law, they created an all-payer model. And this is why this is a Trojan horse for the government takeover of medicine. It's just not just Medicare anymore. Everyone needs to worry. They've created the all-payer model, where they want to collect all data on all patients,
yes.
all commercial insured, all privately insured, and then they will score the physicians, and you'll be paid more or less, and with time, this disparity becomes huge. So the physicians that don't implement and comply will go out of business,
yeah.
and the physicians that do what the government says, will be the ones that stay in business. And most of those will be employed by these big medical industrial groups.
I got you. So brilliant, brilliant concept to kind of keep your model alive and well by paying the docs that do what you want them to do.
Well, that's really right. And we have to fight for the autonomy and ability to do that, because don't you know they want to shut us down?
What do you mean shut who down?
Anybody who wants to go outside of this
scam. Oh, of course, yeah.
Scam.
Yeah, you must be
so,
on their radar. So how do the doctors get a higher score? By doing what?
Oh, you're going to love this.
Oh, yeah.
We've got to spend just a minute talking about this. There's 4 categories.
Right.
Let's start with cost.
Yeah.
The 243-page law spawned 2,000-page rule. These bureaucrats are writing laws. And sadly, I have some sort of internal calling to read this stuff. There's a graph in the rule that shows that the physicians that spend the most on their patients.
Yeah.
So if you come to me and I work you up and operate on you,
yeah.
I get 0 to 2 points. The physicians that spend the least, if you come in, I pat you on the back and say, come back in 6 months and let's see how you're doing, I get 8 to 10 points.
Really?
Yeah. How about that? Cost. The physicians who spend the most on the patients get the least points. The physicians that spend the least, basically deny and ration care, delay it, they get the most.
Wait a minute. They're going to have to pay Dr. Held less money because you're just delaying my operation that I might need or whatever.
I will be paid less if I provide the care for you. They will go in my computer. And they can extract the data. how many tests I ordered, wow, how much I spent, how much I was paid by Medicare or any insurance. The doctors that spend the most on their patients get 0 to 2 points to their score. And then there's a multiplication factor. The doctors that spend the least on their patients get 8 to 10 points.
This is like Orwellian stuff.
It's absolute truth. I always tell people I don't write it. I just read it. And I literally have to take pictures of it when I post it.
Because nobody believes
Twitter.
It, right? Nobody believes it. Well, what are some of the other categories? Then you said they're
okay, let's talk about outcomes.
Yeah.
When they talk about paper performance, they want to talk about outcomes and quality measures. Mm-hmm. Well, this is when I talked about MedPAC earlier. They said, this does not tell what good outcomes are. They've done this system, they've looked at the year, and it doesn't say what the best outcomes are, and it doesn't say what value is. And here's some examples. There have actually been studies in the Journal of American Medical Association, JAMA, and in the Annals of Internal Medicine, that show, for example, let's just look at heart failure. The government in Obamacare created an indicator to look at readmissions, and they said the best hospitals have the fewest readmissions. They're going to get rewarded. The worst hospitals are the ones that readmit patients because, you know, maybe they're saying, well, you didn't treat them right appropriately. There's flaws with this. If you're discharged from the hospital and die, you're not going to get readmitted. Okay.
Right.
So that hospital that sent you out to die is going to get a better score.
Oh, you get a better score when the patient's dead. Good.
Because you don't get readmitted.
Oh, yeah.
Now, they looked at patients at the hospitals that had the lowest readmission rate and they got the most money, and they weren't the best hospitals. If you looked at thousands, and this is in the study, from Harvard Medical School, if you look at thousands of patients with heart failure, the mortality rate, the death rate has gone up under this government policy. Because the government says, we've done great. Under our policy, there are less readmissions. Our policy works. Well, what's happened is the hospitals and doctors are not readmitting their patients because they want to stay in business and make a profit. The patients are going home and the mortality rate has gone up. It's proven. This is moral inversion. This is a perverse government policy. And the second thing is, if you look at, for example, patients, government will set, you have to have a certain percentage of your patients with their blood sugar below a certain level.
Yeah.
Well, I had a patient come in the other day that said she passed out twice, hit her head because she got put on two meds to get her sugar below a certain level. Well, that's not serving the patient well.
No.
The government can't just come out and dictate these standard across the board levels. There is individual variation, but that's not what they want to hear. This is all based on quote unquote population health.
Yeah.
Now, the other sad thing is that they have proven that these quality measures are perversely incentivizing doctors to only take care of the wealthiest, healthiest patients because you get a better score because they do better. It's discouraging. It's increasing healthcare disparity. So the poorest, sickest patients that really need us have worse outcomes. So we'll get a lower score because our patients have worse outcome. We'll get penalized and pay less. So me, as an outsider who won't play this game, I'm seeing more and more sick and advanced patients who come to me and are willing to pay on their own dime a reasonable rate because they can't get the care in the system.
Sure.
Now, how about that?
And of course, yeah, it's amazing. Of course, the lower income, they don't have the wherewithal, the time to do the research and to go to good folk places like Whole Foods. A lot of the people don't even have food stores in their neighborhood, for goodness sake. You know, it's just, you know, of course.
It's really sad.
Yeah, of course they're not going to be as good as health. And so you get more points. You lose points, you know. So what are some of the other categories? Did we get to all?
Okay, so we haven't done them all yet. The other one is basically, it used to be called meaningful use electronic health records. Well, in Orwellian fashion, in the law macro, they wanted to rebrand key terminology to make it sound better. Does that sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
And so they changed it to advancing care information. So basically, using the rulemaking and macro, government granted itself the ability to go into your medical records and without your permission, collect all of your protected health information without your consent on all patients, not just Medicare and Medicaid, all data. And they create these other third and fourth party entities called, for example, quality clinical data registries that are going to collect your data and be able to look at it and sell it. And they have to keep your data in order to qualify. They have to keep your data for 10 years. If on the last day of 10 years, government could come in and say, no, we want you to keep information on that patient forever. And they created these things called authorized certification bodies that are going to be auditing not only the doctors and your health information, but the data registries. You know, now you've got third and fourth levels of intermediaries with access to our medical information. Now, can you imagine what government could do with your medical information? Being able to insert guidelines and take them out, and they've made it illegal to block them from getting in. So if you block government from getting in, you're going to get zero on that part of your score. If you don't transmit government the data, you're going to get a zero on that part of your score. If you don't keep the data, you're going to get a zero. And so it's really quite frightening.
And I suspect all this data is going to be used for people hiring people for, of course, your insurance rate, probably your car insurance. Who knows what this information will be used for?
Well, we really don't know what all it could be used for and to whom it could be sold. And then that's, the money goes back to the center from the selling of the data. They pay back to the money to the government, gets money for selling our data. You know, the other thing is the cost of, let's talk about the cost for a physician's practice. If I'm trying to keep my costs low, they've shown that the cost of having to do this reporting is $40,000. Just having a medical record, being able to report the way government wants you to report is over $40,000 a year per physician.
Really? Wow.
And can you imagine what that does to the cost of care? And yet we can't raise our costs. So physicians are going out of business and being forced to be bought and work for these big conglomerations, which are basically HMOs on steroids, which were proven failures in the 80s.
And these big corporations and these big hospitals, excuse me, are all kind of just holding hands with the government, kind of like Monsanto and the USDA kind of a relationship, that kind of thing.
Absolutely, okay. Because they're trying to divvy up a $1 trillion pie.
Yeah.
And the least they give to the patients, the more they keep.
Uh-huh.
So that's why when you need to go in and have a back operation, your doctor has to say, I need to get prior authorization from United Healthcare, and you have to wait. You may be not able to go work, not support your family. You may be in severe pain. You've got to wait until an insurance employee says you can have the insurance and then the surgery, and they may say you can't. And the same thing with your medication. So it's de facto rationing by delay and denial of care. For every month that you don't get your meds, they've been given money by the government. You know, that's the problem with all these subsidies. The subsidies don't go to the patients. They go for the insurance companies. The insurance companies do better by denying your care. It's a big perverse incentive.
So,
and let me tell you, in the government, so on this data entry and this MIPS thing, in 1 year, this is the first year they're collecting the data, it's costing an extra $1 billion just to look at it on the government end. Where's that billion coming from? So they're just creating system upon system that costs more billions of dollars that we don't have that isn't going to patient care.
Boy, this is the medical industrial complex, isn't it? It's just like the military. It's just one big slush fund. It's just maddening. Did you see, Doc, where they lowered what's normal blood pressure from 140 to 130 so they can sell more statins?
Yeah, can you imagine?
Come on, 130, give me a break.
It's and you know, some people, your blood pressure gets too low, you don't have enough pressure to push it to your brain.
Oh, I know.
Or to your eyes. You can have strokes, you can pass out, it's absurd that they do these across the board things. And we all have examples of the United States Preventive Services Task Force, which in Obamacare they have to pay attention to, because this task force grades a certain treatment or a certain guideline, and if it gets an A, B, or a C, it's covered. If it doesn't, it's not covered. So government's deciding what we get.
So we're getting kind of short on time. But just look at politically, just in the present moment, of course, President Trump's been trying to, get rid of Obamacare. I mean, where are they now? I mean, is Obamacare just going to explode like the president says he wants to just let happen because they can't fix it? Or where are they now with this thing?
Well, it is in a death spiral unless they give the subsidies. They want the government to do these unconstitutional subsidies again. And if he does that and puts in the law and they want to do it even temporary, boy, is that a slippery slope, because then they're in there.
Sure.
Remember, these subsidies go to the insurance companies. So the problem is we have everyone on that big industrial complex wanting this, and the bad messaging going out and the pressure on the politicians. And so we've got to stop and recraft the message and educate people. And that has to be, who do you want deciding your care? Do you want it to be the government? Or do you want it to be your physician and you and your family?
Hmm.
And we've got to stand up and talk to our, well, one, we need to vote out the bad people and vote in good people if we can find good people to want to go up there.
Are there any congressmen or senators that get what you all are talking about?
Yeah, there really are.
Are there a lot of them? Handful?
No, there's a handful. And I think that the good people, for example, Ted Cruz in Texas gets
good?
It.
Is he a good guy?
He's fabulous. He really gets health care.
Mm-hmm.
The Freedom Caucus, Mark Meadows on the House side is superb and gets it.
Yeah.
And these are people that aren't, Mark Meadows, he can't be bought and paid, North Carolina. He is a man of faith and principle, and he's a good man. There's some really good people there.
Yeah.
You know, Ben Carson was excellent. I had the privilege of being
on his...
Was he a
good guy? Yeah, he seemed like a good guy. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. I was able to be on his healthcare policy advisory team while he was running, you know, for his short, you know, stint that he was presidential candidate. And you talk about a good man.
Yeah.
I had the privilege of meeting he and his wife at a meeting, and he's a great man. And so we've got great people up there. It's just that we've got this entrenched bureaucracy that is going forward full steam ahead with the Obamacare policies because they haven't been repealed. Now, the White House, I think, is doing a great job as much as they can.
He's trying,
with getting rid of these absurd rule, thousands of pages of rules and regulations that they put out. So this is one good thing, but we have got to take major action. You know, we've got to get the Senate and the House need to get rid of this. And I do think it's great that they're getting rid of the individual mandate and do tie it to the tax.
That wasn't even constitutional, I don't think. I don't know how they got away with that. Before we go, two things. One is, after I've been studying healthcare for, you know, natural health for 40 years or so, can we not argue, though, Dr. Held, that the basic premise of allopathic care is so flawed anyway? I mean, I get where they're keeping people alive by giving them medicines, pharmaceutical, but it's just treating the symptoms, right? And whether it be blood pressure or cholesterol or blood sugar or PSA tests, they have all these tests in which they can do more because of insurance, right? And they can find anything wrong on numbers and give you medicines. It's what they're doing. The system is flawed. It's not going to, it couldn't survive if you had the best people, right? Could it? I mean, how could it survive?
Well, and I think we're talking about, like what you're talking about, population health versus individual variation. And, you know, in the United States, we are free.
I had a little Skype issue and another guest was calling in, but I want to finish up with you for a minute. We have time. So you were interrupted about 2 minutes ago. Kind of back up a little. Sorry.
Okay, just saying that you're absolutely right that we have lifestyle choices. So that versus the genetic, and also though we have the issue of trauma and cancer.
Oh, of course,
and,
yeah.
You know, yeah. But on the chronic health care basis, and of course we have people born with disability and this
sure,
and that. So
sure.
This is the bottom line is what we're saying is you cannot go in with this population based medicine and apply the same rubric to everyone.
No.
And the patient in the office, when it's the physician and the patient, I can look my patient in the eye and I know where they stand and I can make a decision that's best for them, not just going to the guideline, applying to them something that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Would it not be better overall if we could just everybody save their own money once a month and just go to a doctor and pay cash?
Absolutely. This is where we need health savings account that'll be tax-free.
Uh-huh.
Why is it helping an employer? That's a whole nother show in itself.
Yeah.
If we had health savings account, we have transparency. We see what we're spending. We'd make wise choices.
Mm-hmm.
We'd have skin in the game.
Yeah.
And we'd get to keep our money instead of at the end of the year. You've thrown away, with your deductible and these onerous premiums, you've thrown away $17,000 or $20,000, whether you've gone to the doctor once or not.
Is that what people are generally paying? Oh, you mean because they're picking up another insurance company, Doc, right? Because Medicare doesn't do it all. So they're generally doing another one, right? 20 grand.
Well, the people 64 and under. Yes.
Wow.
That's what the plans are for people. Some are even higher. The people between the ages of about 55 to 64, it's unreal what their premiums are on if you're not under an employer-based plan. So this is a whole nother topic that we should talk about. But why not be able to take that money? If you're spending, $1,200 a month on a premium, why couldn't you put $1,200 a month into your health savings account, let it grow every year, be the custodian of your money? And this is what we've got to do, empower the people. We're smart. We're not stupid. It needs to be simple, not convoluted. We're being played.
And then your point is really well taken. Somebody says, well, I want to give you a colonoscopy, and somebody could then do the research and maybe decide that he doesn't want to do one. And he wants to, maybe he doesn't want to do one. And it's his responsibility and it's his colon. So, maybe he saves the money and figures out a way how to, take care of his colon with different lifestyle changes, better food or whatever it is. I don't know. At least they can make the decision themselves, right? But they're not making a decision now because the guys say, okay, yeah, sure, I'll do a colonoscopy, sure, because they're not going
to
pay for it.
Or maybe you need one, you're bleeding, and you have to wait a month for your government, your insurance to improve it, and you die from colon cancer that would be otherwise treatable.
Well, Dr. Hell, we need to talk a little bit more. And what's that one website? Is it AAP Solutions?
AAPS. AAPS, Associated American Physicians and Surgeons Online.org. AAPS Online.org. Okay. And then also, I'm on Twitter if people want to talk to me on Twitter.
Okay.
I also have a blog.
Okay.
ChrisHeldMD.wordpress.com and a group called AmericanDoctorsForTruth.org. I'd love to interact with people, Texans,
Well, no, we have people all over the world listening.
I love that.
I love it. I'm gonna just leave you with something that I don't know. You probably know this, but if you don't, you should know it. We study money on our network once a month, and I've been hanging out with a guy for about 25 years who studies monetary history in the Federal Reserve and how this game works, Dr. Hell. Mm-hmm. And he taught us. I've known since LBJ days. They've been taking money out of the Social Security trust fund, quote unquote, and putting it into general revenue, right? Mm-hmm. And they've all done a little bit of it. And then each year, every president's done more and more. And Bill Clinton did the famous zero deficit or something. And that was a big lie because he took all the money out of Social Security. Do you know what? There is no trust fund. Zero, nada, zero, nada in Medicare or Social Security. None. Gone. They're all non-marketable securities. They're IOUs. So 77 cents out of every dollar that Americans pay today go to servicing the debt service. And part of that is paying back into Social Security every month what they took out. That's true. There's no money there. There's no money there.
It's horrible.
There's no money there. There's no money there. That's why they're $1.5 trillion in the red every year today, and why President Obama went into debt $10 trillion in his 8 years, and President Trump's probably got to do the same because the books don't even work anymore. They don't even work.
No. It's just terrible. The unfunded liabilities and what they're doing, it's worse than conquest. By physical conquest of our country, we've got to do something. They're killing us. We have not secured our blessings of liberty.
And they've taken all the money. They've stolen all the money.
The money's gone. Yep.
So you all know that. You guys know that the money's gone, right?
Oh, and our lives are at bay. And what better bargaining chip? That's why socialized medicine. You got that. You've got it all because you can't argue with your life or the life of your child. It's the cornerstone. It's tragic.
If you were a queen or president, what would you do?
Well, first of all, I would completely eliminate, just zero out the Obamacare and do the things that we said. I would leave in temporarily, you know, Medicaid, safety net for the poor, Medicare as promised, but I would totally open it up to the free market upon which we were founded. And we would, I would have the HSAs. I would let everyone choose from Medicaid to Medicare patients. We'd have HSAs that were tax sheltered. I would let everything be individually owned, not tether you to your employee. I'd make all healthcare expenses outside of taxes. I'd allow people to own their own hospitals, their own businesses. People purchase their own medications. At the state level, you know, Texas, we can't dispense medications in our office. We've got to fight that legislation. We need that to come in year after next when it when we meet again in the legislature. Many states have in-office dispense. We can. We've got to break up the safe harbor law that allows this $100 billion a year to be squandered on the GPOs and the PBMs, pharmaceutical benefit managers. We've got to break out these. We've got to make insurance insurance again. We need to remove insurance corporations from being your new doctors and rationers. There's so there's just, you know, if you did just a five, six things, we could get back on track. And the bottom line is that we as physicians love our patients. We will take care of you.
I know you will. Well,
there's charity. Let us do charity care. We'll all do it. That's how we'll take care of the poor.
Well, thanks, Doc. Keep in touch. Let me know what's going on, and we'll come back and do it again sometime soon. And so we can figure out where the $900 billion a year are not being gone taken for healthcare itself. It's for something else. Just poof, it's gone.
All cranking the wheels.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me.
Been a pleasure.
Me.
Thank you, Dr. L. See you soon.
Bye-bye. Bye.
All right. Okay, so let's see if we can pull up. Okay, let me do this, and then we'll do it. Previously with Dr. Charles Gant, MD, about, sulfur.
I just wanted to say, Patrick, that I heard during the break talking to Dr. Stephanie, I'm a big fan of hers.
Are you really? She's great. This sulfur transferase thing and the glyphosates. Then there's also a genetic predisposition to this as well?
Yes.
Oh. And that could complicate matters too for those on GMO foods, huh?
Exactly. But now that we're in this toxic age with the glyphosate and the massive sulfur deficiencies, and generally I recommend a little MSM, 500 milligrams, one twice a day for just about everybody, just to get some basic organic sulfur on board.
Do you feel like it helps them to get some of this yuck stuff out and clean out the trash?
Well, that's
the whole point. Huh?
Well, I can see that sulfur is a conjugator of toxins. Sulfur transferase transfers the sulfur. Sulfur has a love affair with heavy metals and other toxins. So, I mean, I saw that right from the beginning, and so I just assumed that a little bit of sulfur could help just about anybody.
Well, maybe you should take a little every day. You can click an order, Pure Sulfur, right on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com.